Greetings. You are listening to the Northeast Ohio AFSC Weekly Audio Podcast. I'm Greg Coleridge. It is Friday, July the 29th. Thanks so much for listening. We seek every week to inform you about issues you feel are important, update you about past and upcoming AFSC plans and activities, and inspire you to take action. It is, after all, a grassroots social movement made up of well-informed, prepared, and motivated people that always and have always created real change. We begin, as we do every week, with updates on events from the previous week that we were involved in. Only two of those. On Monday, I attended a meeting at the invitation of Madeline Watts, who is the key person, a point person in the South Euclid Move to Amend effort, to the South Euclid City Council meeting, where they took part in what was a perfunctory vote, but nevertheless a necessary vote to place the initiative there in South Euclid pertaining to Move to Amend on the ballot this November. The citizens had done their part in collecting sufficient signatures, but as every charter in the state and around the country seems to stipulate, once citizens do their part, it does not initiatives initially or immediately go on the ballot. There has to be at least some kind of perfunctory vote that council has to take, or steps that have to take place that may be routine. Well, they're all supposed to be routine, but some can be very quick, while others, in the case of the city of Cleveland, can be very drawn out. And in the city of Cleveland, as may have mentioned before, even though citizens met the petition requirement, city council, according to the charter, has up to 60 days to consider to take action, to either approve the initiative as presented by voters, change it, or reject it. If they choose to change it or reject it, then it automatically goes on the ballot. If they approve it, then, in a sense, it bypasses. It becomes law. And so, in a sense, with all of these measures, we don't want supportive city councils to approve it. We want them to place this on the ballot, which Monday evening, South Euclid City Council chose to do, thanks to them and Marty Gelfand, who is kind of the lead person on council, who himself circulated a petition. In fact, many council persons in South Euclid either signed or circulated a petition. Good for them. Thanks to them. It's now on the ballot. We can only hope that Cleveland will do the same. Deadline in that case is August 10th. There's a scheduled meeting then. In fact, final language has to be at the Board of Elections by August 10th. So there is a very, very tight window. We are hoping City of Cleveland will expedite their 60-day window and kind of crunch it down to basically 2 weeks, hold their public hearing at the same time as their general meeting, maybe, you know, an hour before. Time will tell. We may be calling on you via email or on Facebook or whatever to try to take action and contact, particularly if you live in the city of Cleveland, your council member before August the 10th. So anyway, there was a good meeting, a celebratory meeting, a gathering that culminated a laborious process, particularly by Madeline and others there in South Euclid who were successful in getting the Move to Amend initiative on the ballot this November. We provided some minimal help, but the real heavy lifting for that initiative was done by Madeline and a few others in South Euclid. So AFSC was glad to provide some support there, as we have done in minimal support in Shaker, much heavier support in Cleveland. And we will find out in the next probably week or so whether the effort in Newark, which is downstate, just north of Columbus, whether their petitions met the valid threshold to get ballot access also this November. So that was on Monday. Wednesday evening, on the 27th, was the monthly meeting of Radio Free Akron. At 6 p.m., plans continue onward. Probably very soon, there will be streaming. You can go to radiofreeakron.org to get details about the streaming and the programming and the like. That should be launched here within a few weeks. So that continues. There's plans for a major fundraising concert in September, and we continue to plug away at securing funds and researching what equipment we need. Again, we do plan to be up and running over the air, 96.9 FM, by the fall. So those were the major activities taking place this past week. Actually, the major activity last week wasn't connected to any event, but just simply catching up and recovering from the RNC the last week, and actually turning in the petitions and doing what we could to support the Cleveland Move to Amend effort the previous week. So it was quite the concentrated period of time over the last few weeks. And this week was spent really trying to kind of collect ourselves, figure out what we needed to do by way of thank yous and in terms of follow-ups and necessary next steps. So quite honestly, that was the bulk of what we did more internally and off the radar this past week at AFSC. Well, turning to events coming up next week, two of them in particular beginning, in fact, going on right now. I, in fact, am at Bluffton College in Bluffton, Ohio, for the annual meeting of what's called the Lake Erie Yearly Meeting, gathering of friends or Quakers in the better part of Ohio, northern part of Ohio, western Pennsylvania, much of Michigan, and little bits of West Virginia. This is a gathering that takes place among friends, again, once a year to come together to share, to build a community, to talk about what is going on within their respective meetings of worship, what kind of social action friends are engaged in, and what needs to be done in support of one another and Quaker organizations and other groups and efforts and coalitions that friends' meetings might be taking part in their respective communities. I will be involved tomorrow, Saturday, in a workshop with John Howell, who is clerk of the Athens Friends Meeting, on issues of monetary reform. And so looking forward to sharing the latest pertaining to that and trying to engage friends in that particular issue. You know, it should be said that this seems to be an issue, again, that seems to be alien and foreign to many of us. We're more familiar, are we not? Those of us who pay attention to financial or budget matters are very concerned and quite astute and engaged and literate around issues of tax and spending issues at either local, state, and or federal. But there's this third leg called monetary issues, monetary concerns, that is, if you will, can be considered to be a third tool within the public toolkit of how to try to bring about justice, peace, and sustainability. We've not used it, though, publicly very well, and that's largely because we have handed off, we've given away the ability to create and circulate money, and that's what monetary issues is all about. It's about money, not just spending it, not just acquiring it from taxes, but creating it, as every government does through their central bank. The question is, do they do it directly, or do they, or have they handed it off? Have they privatized it or corporatized it, allowed it to be done by private entities, in particular by banking institutions? Or are the central banks themselves not public, but more private, if you will, maybe totally private or quasi-public private? And that is actually the reality in most countries of the world. Either these entities are wholly private or they have some kind of quasi-private element. In either case, though, in almost every country of the world, the power to coin money, coin being a verb, to create money, the money that is used in that country for distribution to engender economic movement activity to try to create justice and economic growth, sustainability, whatever the priorities may be, to promote job creation and to meet basic needs, should that function, should that ability be one that is in public hands or in private hands? And most countries of the world have made that decision of putting it in private hands, in corporate hands, which is left to banking institutions and other financial entities. So this is a reality we must come to terms with and understand how it happened, how monetary policy works, what we can do, and how we can be involved. Our friends in Great Britain who work on such issues of monetary reform, there's a group there called Positive Money, and I will certainly be bringing this up, receives most of their financial support from Quaker or Friends organizations. So Friends or Quakers in the UK get it. They understand it. They see the connections between their own goals of justice and peace and sustainability and the need to democratize the creation of money, to take it away from private entities, from corporate entities. So looking forward to that discussion, to that sharing of information, to see what can be done in trying to build the movement here in the U.S., similar or akin to the movements that are taking place in such places as the U.K., Switzerland, Spain, Austria, the Netherlands, other countries in Europe and elsewhere around the world, where people are actively involved in efforts to educate, advocate, and organize for the democratization of money and money creation. So look forward to that discussion and seeing where that goes in trying to not just simply increase the literacy of monetary issues, but to translate that then awareness into taking action. And in the case of Friends, hopefully take a position in support of real monetary reform, which in the United States anyway has taken the form of support for the NEED Act, the National Emergency Employment Defense Act, that was introduced in two sessions of Congress, not the current one, but the previous couple, led by former Congressperson Dennis Kucinich from Ohio, as well as John Conyers from Michigan. And then to take it out wider beyond friend circles to other organizations to try to get them to weigh in and to try to encourage our elected representatives to reintroduce the NEED Act in updated form to try to get this movement moving to create money that is in the control and in the hands of we the people. So anyway, that will be taking place tomorrow, the 29th, here in Bluffton, Ohio. Or I should say the 30th, right? Saturday is the 30th. Losing track of time here. So anyway, that is taking place. The other event taking place this week is an interview that I and Paul Hassan, who is on the AFSC Northeast Ohio board, also is involved in interfaith ministries in Lorain County, was a spokesperson for the End Poverty Now march that took place during the RNC, and was very active also in participating in a workshop, as well as helping to organize the People's Justice and Peace Convention. Paul and I will be interviewed on what's called Move to Amend Reports. That's a weekly program, a podcast of Move to Amend that appears every Thursday at 10 a.m. Eastern Time. So Michael, or I should say David Cobb, along with Paul Hassan and I, will be involved in reporting on what took place in both Philadelphia during the Democratic National Convention, which ended yesterday, as well as last week, what took place in Cleveland during the Republican National Convention. So Paul and I and David, since he was in Cleveland as well, will be commenting, reflecting on what took place in Cleveland, and then David on what took place in Philadelphia, to build the movement, the democracy movement, the justice and peace movement, in an integrated way to try to bring about some kind of pressure and try to create separate institutions that can create independent alternatives, but also as well to create pressure on our elected representatives to do what's necessary to bring about the fundamental kind of change to respond to the fundamental problems and crises that exist on the political, social, racial, economic, and environmental arenas. So we'll be commenting on that at Move to Amend Reports, and that is at 10 o'clock this upcoming Thursday, August 4th. You can tune in at blogtalkradio.com/Move to Amend. That's blogtalkradio.com/Move to Amend. Of course, all of that's preceded by www. Well, those are the main events taking place next week. Finally, in lieu of commenting on a number of news items from this past week that we often do, we often, instead of that, have an interview. And we are very fortunate this week to have one of those. And very fortunate indeed to have with us Jocelyn Travis, who is very involved in issues of voter repression and suppression with the NAACP. She also is engaged in climate and environmental justice with the Sierra Club, but has certainly done quite a bit of education and advocacy and organizing around voter repression and suppression. She facilitated one of the workshops that we helped organize during the People's Justice and Peace Convention, July 15 through 17 in Cleveland, on the issue of voter repression and suppression. So very happy to, this week, have Jocelyn Travis with us.
Greetings. Greg Coleridge here with the American Friends Service Committee. And we're speaking today with Jocelyn Travis. Jocelyn has been an advocate in the Cleveland community for over 40 years with the NAACP, as well as numerous civic organizations. She is actively involved with issues of voting rights, climate and economic justice, youth and inclusion. Jocelyn facilitated a workshop at the recent People's Justice and Peace Convention that took place in Cleveland a couple of weeks ago on the very topics of voter suppression and repression, and that's where I got to be with her and hear her and join her in the workshop, and knew she was a pro that you needed to hear about on this topic to get riled up about, but also to be inspired to take action. So thanks, Jocelyn, for taking the time to be here.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me, Greg, and I certainly appreciate all the great work you're doing in this area. Thank you so much.
Well, thank you. So why don't we just get into it? Voting rights, voter suppression. You know, some say this is a real problem. Others say this is, in terms of many of the solutions proposed, that they're solutions in search of a problem, that there really isn't much of a problem in terms of voting fraud and the like. So, you know, let's sort of get into it. Don't all Americans have the right to vote currently? I mean, didn't the 15th Amendment passed at the end of the Civil War guarantee people the right to vote? What's the problem?
Well, certainly everyone has the right to vote as long as you're a U.S. citizen and you will be 18 by the November election. But the thing is that a lot of people don't realize their rights. For example, people who have felonies, once they're convicted of a felony, they need to re-register, because once you're convicted, that registration is purged or canceled from the voting roll. And also the fact that every state is different. There's no uniformity across the country. So, for example, in Ohio, if you are convicted of a felony, then when you're released from prison, you simply re-register. But in Alabama, Florida, Mississippi, you actually have to have your rights restored, which means you have to take legal measurements to do that. So that's part of the problem, I think, is a matter of education and people understanding their rights. But you also have so many other issues and barriers that people are presented with as it relates to voting. You know, one of the things going on right now is that the Board of Elections are canceling or purging people, voters, from the rolls. If you haven't voted in 4 years, and say your registration may be purged or canceled. So we need to make sure that you contact the Board of Elections before the 30-day deadline to register before the election. You know, the 30-day deadline is October 11th. Call the Board of Elections and make sure your voter status is current. You know, if the Board of Elections thinks you moved or you died or because there's no activity, they're going to purge or cancel you from the voting rolls. And when you go to vote, you will have to vote a provisional and that vote will not count. So there are many, many ways that people's vote can be suppressed, you know, including things like intimidation and language and reading barriers and just all kind of issues to try to prevent us from voting, which is why it's so important that people get out and cast their ballot, because that's the one right that we all have to make a difference in this country and in our community.
Now, that purging process of 4 years, that used to be much longer in Ohio, didn't it? Wasn't it 8 years?
Yeah, it used to be like two presidential elections. So that's kind of what they based it on, two cycles. But they start the process, you know, like after 4 years. So right now, we're saying that within the next 4 years, there could be somewhere around 20% or over 1 million voters who are in that pipeline to be canceled, you see. So that's why it's just important. And the thing is, you know, mistakes are always made. You know, people just, you know, don't know that their registration has been canceled. And when you get to the polling location, you know, there's nothing you can do about it because you just kind of, you could be caught in a trap of a mistake. But we just need to make sure there are no mistakes come November 8th. Every vote is vital. That's why Ohio is known as a swing state, because the election in Ohio can go any way. There's always a tie in Ohio in some municipalities. So it's just so critical that everyone casts their ballot and everyone exercises their right to vote.
Right, right. So if individuals are unsure, they should call their county Board of Elections, because Board of Elections, there's one in each county, so you don't call Columbus, although I guess you could, but it's much better, much easier to just call your county. Look up in the blue pages of your phone book, or if you have a phone, you know, you can search for a Board of Elections in your county, and you can get that phone number and call that number.
Right. You can call them, or you can go online, Greg. You can go online and check their voter. Right. Yes, and check your voter status. You know, it's very easy to do. And it's a great thing because many counties, for example, I'm Cuyahoga County, and in Cuyahoga County you can also get an idea of what's going to be on the ballot, you know, so that way you can know, you know, what's going on before you get your ballot, before you go to the polls, you know. So so you should really, you know, become familiar with the website for your county or Secretary of State's website.
Or Secretary of State, that's right. So briefly, what are you, I mean, you touched on some of the other impediments to voting in Ohio and across the country. I mean, are there some other big ones that, you know, those who are trying to engage in mischief have used to try to disenfranchise people?
Yeah. If you recall, in 2012, there were billboards put up all throughout the black community, minority, low-income communities that said voter fraud is a felony. You know, and it's a form of intimidation to try to scare people and prevent people from going to the polls. Sometimes you'll even have people being arrested as they're going to the election, to the polling location, with the claim that they have warrants out for their arrest. You know, the fact that our voting hours are being reduced, you know, our early voting hours are being reduced. So there are just so many tactics being used to keep us from voting, you know, even the number of voting machines, you know, not enough voting machines, which means that people have to wait in long lines to vote. And a lot of people don't have time. They have to go back and pick up their child from daycare, or, you know, or they lack transportation. So that's why we also want to encourage people to vote by mail. The Secretary of State is going to be sending out vote by mail applications in the first couple of weeks of September. Send that application back. You will get a ballot in the mail. That way you can take your time, vote, and then make sure that when you send that ballot back, and it must be mailed by at least, it must be postmarked by November 7th, a day before the election, but make sure you have the proper amount of postage on that ballot, that return vote by mail or absentee ballot. You know, so that's another way that we can, you know, if we think that there might be any problem on election day, or if you're going to be out of town, if you're elderly, disabled, sick, you know, whatever, or you just want to get out there and help with the election, vote by mail or go to the Board of Elections and vote early.
Right. No, very good advice, all of that, that everyone should take heed. One of the impediments that certainly has been used and has been built by those who try to disenfranchise people is the issue of creating voter ID. Now, we have voter ID in Ohio. Seems like a reasonable idea. We've, you know, oftentimes have been told we need it because of the massive amounts of voting fraud that has taken place in the past or in the present. You know, what's the scoop about fraud in voting? How much is it? How prevalent is it in Ohio, elsewhere? What's your read of voter ID? Is it fair? Is it just? Does it discriminate? If so, against groups, individuals?
Well, of course, you know, again, because every state is different, there's no uniformity, which is a problem. You know, some states' ID rules are way more restrictive than others. In Ohio, if you vote early or vote by mail, all you need are the last four digits of your Social Security number. If you go to the polling location, though, you will need to have some form of ID. This is, you know, for people who don't drive, for elderly people, for college students who may have moved to Ohio to attend school, that can be a problem. For people who are homeless, that can be a problem because there's a cost to getting IDs. So IDs can be very restrictive, especially when you, again, realize that everyone should have the right to vote as long as they're eligible. So why are these barriers being, you know, why are we being confronted with these barriers? You know, just let us vote and make sure that when we vote, we got to make sure that our vote is being counted. If you end up voting provisionally, then you need to check with, you need to go back and if it's the fact that you didn't have the right ID, then go to the Board of Elections and provide them with that ID, you know, after the election, so your ballot will count, you know, or even call back and check to make sure that your provisional has been counted if you have to vote. But a provisional means that that's your last resort.
Right, right. You know, the thing about voter ID that sort of irks me so much is for several decades I've worked with many communities on many issues to get ballot items, you know, ballot measures, citizen initiatives on the ballot on a variety of different issues. And, you know, citizen initiatives can very much affect public policy, increasing taxes, trying to prevent the privatization of certain public assets, you know. You can have all sorts of citizen initiatives that can be, that creates laws or undoes laws. Or you can have a citizen initiative that tries to recall candidates, you know, public office holders. In no way, shape, or form are you asked to provide an ID when you sign a petition. How do they validate those signatures? They do it by matching the signature that a person puts on your petition with the record they have down at the Board of Elections. That's how they validate whether you say who you are, who you are. Well, that's the same. It's not like people, when they go in to vote, there is no sort of validity. The validity comes from your signature matching up or not with the signature on file at the Board of Elections. If it seems to be okay with citizen initiatives, which it is, in every city, in every county, in Ohio, and as far as I know, in every state in this country, then why is it not legitimate when it comes to going to the polls to elect candidates?
Yeah, no, I totally agree with you. You know, when you know, your signature has to be checked when you go, you know, to vote. And so, but again, we have to realize that our state legislature is not doing what's in the best interest of its citizens. And we have to be very, very mindful that if we don't speak out, if we don't know what our state representative or state senator is doing, they're gonna have between now and election day, who knows what other tactics and gimmicks and games are going to be played in that state legislature. So we really need to know what's going on, and we need to start speaking out about it and challenging what's happening, you know. So, but I agree with you, you know. Why should it be difficult for you to be able to cast your ballot? That's one of the rights that we have as citizens. You know, why is it so complicated?
Yeah, and the instances, it seems like every year when those who are trying to limit or come up with voter ID or other forms of suppression, when they trot out talking about this as an anecdote to voting fraud and then are challenged to produce actual instances, it becomes almost laughable how there's just a handful, if those, and oftentimes those examples of where, you know, a younger person signed on behalf or tried to vote for their parent or grandparent, and here it turned out they had legal custody to do that. And you are allowed to sign something on behalf of someone else if you get prior legal custody to do that. So it's instances like that, and when you throw those out, basically there's just only a handful. And yet here's this massive solution that can end up suppressing and disenfranchising thousands of people based on no or literally only a handful of instances of so-called fraud.
Yeah, no, voter fraud is very minimal. And you have the right to take someone in the polling place to help you, you know, if it's a matter of reading. Because, you know, when we look at those issues, they're very complicated and very difficult to read. You know, the average person reads on a fourth grade level. So, you know, if you want somebody to come in and help you even with vision, if people have a problem really seeing or, you know, the language, you know, you have the right to take someone into the polling place with you, you know. So there are a lot of rights that we have as citizens. And the thing I also want to mention, Greg, is that we also want to make sure that, you know, you should contact your Board of Elections and see if they have positions available to be a poll worker, an election official. We need people inside the polling location, and we need poll monitors, volunteers outside the polling locations to help make sure that people are being treated fairly and they're able to vote. The polling locations are open at the right time. We need attorneys to help us if there are any issues on election day. And also keep in mind there is a hotline, 866-OUR-VOTE, 866-OURVOTE, that's live right now. So if people, you know, have any issues as is leading up to election day, and on election day you call that number, and it will be routed to organizations that are out trying to make sure that everyone's vote is protected.
So that is 1-866-OUR-VOTE, V-O-T-E.
That's correct. That's correct.
1-866-OUR-VOTE. So there's a number of things people can do here today. Make sure you are registered to vote by either going online or calling Board of Elections, paying attention to instances of so-called anti-fraud bills that may come up in the state legislature or federally, to be engaged in that and to contact your legislators at the state level, state House members, state Senate members, to express your concern about anything that might inhibit or prevent or suppress or repress people's right to be involved in the electoral process, also to be a poll worker or a poll monitor, and to get a hold of people, I guess, like you. So how can people, if they want to become a poll worker, poll monitor, find out more about what you're doing and what needs to be done, how can they reach you, Jocelyn?
Well, first of all, if they want to work, be a poll worker or election official for the Board of Elections, just contact your county Board of Elections. I know Cuyahoga County, always short, always in need of good people to work. And, you know, you get paid for that and you're doing a service. If you would like to be a poll monitor, you should call your local NAACP. Like, for instance, Cleveland, 216-231-6260. You also have numerous voting rights organizations throughout the community. We just need people to get involved, become engaged, and we need, most of all, everyone to become educated to the issues and the candidates. Also, make sure that you vote the entire ballot. We know that it's a huge presidential election year, but please don't go in there and just vote for president. Vote the entire ballot, because all those races are vital to the strength and the well-being of our community.
Indeed, indeed. Just one last question. There's been, certainly it came up during the People, Justice, and Peace Convention as one of the more long-term solutions engaged or involved in this. You said there's such a patchwork system, state by state, on a lot of these measures. One of the ideas that came up and was supported is a constitutional amendment that guarantees the right to vote. Where do you stand on that?
Well, you know, certainly, I'm just so thankful that the People's Convention and the volunteers and the leadership had to pass the vision to understand we have problems with our voting system. Anything we can do to make it better, to improve it, to grant access, I'm all for it. I think it's awesome.
Great. Jocelyn, thank you ever so much for taking the time and for sharing your insight and for offering suggestions on how people can become more engaged.
Thank you so much again for all your great work, Greg. Look forward to working with you as we move towards November 8th and beyond.
That's all for this week. Keep up their activities. Contact us with questions, concerns, or willingness to help out. Our phone is 330-928-2301. Our website, afsc.org/Akron. Facebook page, facebook.com/NEOAFSC. Program blog, northeastohioafsc.wordpress.com. My blog, createrealdemocracy.wordpress.com. Until next week, onward for justice, peace, and democracy.